from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. As cases of the novel coronavirus increase, some businesses are advising workers to stay home. But for many, that means foregoing a much-needed paycheck. According to Labor Department data, only 60% of workers in the service industry have access to paid time off when they're sick. And many Americans are without health insurance. We'll talk about the impact of the coronavirus epidemic on low-income people in the Bay Area. And we want to hear from you. Are you a worker with an unstable income? Do you lack paid sick leave or health insurance? You can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org. It's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Even before the novel coronavirus reached the U.S. and began to spread, many low-income Americans faced challenges like lack of a livable wage or lack of access to affordable health care. And now, low-income people are expected to be the hardest hit by the effects of the coronavirus epidemic. How are those who lack health insurance, stable housing, or regular work going to weather the crisis? Joining me to discuss this is Saru Jayaraman, director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, also president of One Fair Wage, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you and appreciate your being here. I was reading a quote of yours where you said, and it struck me, vulnerability of service workers is going to spread the crisis, and actually the crisis increases vulnerability, and I think that's exactly right. But there's so many people who simply don't have the choice of staying home, but have to go to work sick. Let's begin there.
That's right. You know, we've got 2 million food service workers in California. It's actually, we have 1/7 of the entire country's food service workers are here in the state of California. 14 million nationally, 2 million in the state of California. So much of our economy and time and even culture is spent eating out. And that's both when we go to a restaurant or even if people are staying home and ordering food in, you've got to remember it's still being made at a restaurant. And so we have to worry about these workers that are going to be making our food throughout this crisis, no matter what happens, even if we're staying home. They can't afford to stay home. The vast majority of them can't afford to stay home. I think people have to understand that paid sick leave is critical, and also that on top of paid sick leave, we need to make sure that workers have wages that allow them to stay home, even if they have a paid sick day. So it's both, in our experience, it has to be both paid sick leave and sufficient livable wages so that they're not thinking, you know, I really need to go to work to get those tips. Instead, they feel like the wage that they're getting that allows them to stay home really is enough to keep them at home. So that is the vulnerability that I think could really exacerbate the crisis, the fact that most workers don't feel the luxury that, you know, Facebook and Google workers feel to work from home. They don't have that luxury. They have to go to work. That is a crisis for us because we know that 70% of foodborne illness can be traced back to sick restaurant workers, according to the CDC, and that more than half of all norovirus cases can be traced back to sick food service workers, according to the CDC. You know, that is a crisis that is caused by a structural inequality that these workers face. And then that crisis that is exacerbated by more people getting sick, more people staying home, is going to make these workers vulnerable because they're going to lose tips, they're going to lose hours. It's really uncertain for a lot of these workers what their future is going to be with regard to their jobs.
It's terribly uncertain.
It's terribly uncertain, yes.
And weighs on all of us. I mean, the concern about food handling and just the concern about these people who are below the threshold and don't have health insurance. And in many cases, let's talk about paid sick leave. The Labor Department says only 60% of service industry workers actually have access to time off when they're sick. And here in California, we had a pioneered program here in San Francisco specifically back in 2007. 2015, there was a sick leave program passed statewide, but that only covers 3 days a year. Can you give us a picture?
That's right. I mean, imagine a food service worker having coronavirus and you're allowed 3 days off per year. And even those 3 days are at a really low wage that typically you supplement with tips when you actually are going to work. So you are getting the bare minimum, and it's only for 3 days. If you have coronavirus, I can bet you it's not going to be a three-day sickness. And so if you're a low-wage worker that has to pay rent and pay the bills and feed your kids, you know, 3 days off at a minimum wage is just not going to cut it. And you're going to see workers going to work when they're sick, whether they know they're sick or they don't know they're sick. I mean, our industry, we have a culture of going to work when sick. And it's definitely gotten better by paid sick leave. Paid sick leave has been an enormous step forward, but the amount of paid sick leave is not enough to address this crisis. And certainly the wages in our industry are nowhere enough that we need on top of paid sick leave. Today, we actually, in partnership with about 31 doctors and public health officials from all over the country, released a white paper and a letter to Governor Cuomo in New York, and really addressed to the country, saying, we are facing a crisis. These are public health doctors and officials. We are facing a crisis, and this is not the time to be excluding these workers from a full livable minimum wage, to be saying we can't afford to pay them. This is the time to figure out how to allow these workers to stay home when they're sick, because they are kind of a critical, like kind of an apex for us in terms of the spread of virus. We all know that the food service industry is responsible for the spread of flu during the flu season. Imagine what could happen with this very deadly virus.
Again, Saru Jayaraman is director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, also president of One Fair Wage. And Anthony Wright is executive director of Health Access California. Anthony Wright, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Great to be on.
I guess the place I'd like to begin with you is when you think about people who are in poverty, who don't know necessarily where their next paycheck is coming from, or have to live off tips and gratuities, if you will. And you think about just the struggle that these people are going through, people on an hourly wage, people who don't know about sick leave or health insurance. How are they going to weather this crisis?
I think this coronavirus crisis has exposed a lot of the issues and gaps in our healthcare system today, both for the uninsured and the insured. For the uninsured, the first place to go if you have the symptoms of coronavirus is to call your doctor. But if people don't have a doctor, what do they do? And even with the significant reductions of the uninsured under the Affordable Care Act, we went from 7 million down to 3 million. That's still 3 million uninsured Californians who don't have coverage, and in many cases don't have a usual source of care. There's also issues and financial barriers for people who are insured or at least underinsured in terms of what may be available. I think there's been good actions by the state and federal levels to try to make sure that there's no cost sharing for screening and testing. And although there are gaps there because of the different jurisdictional issues between state and federal regulation, but that doesn't necessarily cover treatment. So we have this patchwork system. And I want to be clear, for people who have these symptoms, for people who are at risk, they should seek the care. And there are options, but it is a patchwork and there are gaps and holes in those options. And so we can go through them in this program. But, it's troubling in our if we're trying to actually get a handle on this public health crisis. Our healthcare system is stronger when everybody is included. And when we have large gaps in the system, that actually makes our public health response particularly vulnerable and incomplete.
We're talking with Anthony Wright, who's executive director of Health Access California. They're a nonprofit dedicated to achieving quality and affordable health care for all Californians. Anthony, I'd like your response to Vice President Pence announcing today that a group of major health insurance companies have agreed not to charge patients copays when they get tested for coronavirus and to cover the cost of treatment. And Pence made the comments at a meeting at the White House with insurance company executives.
Yeah, that follows, you know, California actually had taken action earlier this month, last week, with regard to this, with regard to their regulators, both Department of Managed Healthcare under Governor Gavin Newsom and under Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, to basically require that screening and testing be available, be covered, and without cost sharing. And that's whether it is in a clinic setting, in a hospital setting, and regardless of the setting. The two issues, and it's good that the federal government is taking action as well, is that the state directives only apply to state-regulated plans, and so it's good that there's at least voluntary compliance at the national level by national plans. And the other issue is what will large employers do who self-insure? But we hope and expect that many of them will follow those guidelines. But again, it's hard to have a blanket answer because our system is so fragmented that that you have to rely on lots of different insurers, employers, other entities to make that decision. We do think that there continues to be an issue if people do actually need treatment after being screened, and you know that's some work that we need to do both for the insured who may have significant cost sharing, who may not have met their deductible this early in the year, but also especially for the uninsured who may be facing bills, and we need to have a way to deal with that. We do have some existing programs, whether it's Medi-Cal, whether it's people can get enrolled to Covered California. County programs are really important in this regard. But again, it's a patchwork, and it depends on the county. It depends on people's specific situation.
Where do child care workers fit into that patchwork? And let me go to you on this, Saru, if I can. Saru Jayaraman, again, Director of Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, who has studied food and wages. I'm just worried, as many are, about the effect on working parents. If you have health problems that require staying at home, and a quarantine would certainly do that as well, child care workers are really a part of this picture in a big way.
They are, and some are unionized thanks to SEIU's good organizing work, and they, of course, would have more paid sick leave. But for those that aren't, they, like restaurant workers, will have the state 3 days off, and if they're working with your child, you know, and they're sick, 3 days is not going to be enough to cut it. And like restaurant workers, they're some of the lowest paid workers in the state, so it's a real concern. And I think we also have to be worried about the fact that we are worried about California, we're worried about low wage workers in California, but we are already seeing how what's happening in other states and even other countries is affecting us here. And the fact that the rest of the country has even lower wages than our low wages for these workers. You know, restaurant workers federally get a subminimum wage of $2.13 an hour. Child care workers make a lot less in states where they're not unionized. All of these things, all of these low-wage workers in other states spreading the virus is ultimately going to impact us here in California. And so we have to be concerned about the fact that across the country, these are the lowest paid workers, often the ones excluded from things like wages and paid sick leave, and they're precisely the workers these crisis moments are the moments when the country hopefully wakes up and realizes these are precisely the workers we cannot afford to exclude from livable wages or from paid sick leave. But often because of lobbying from powerful trade lobbies like the National Restaurant Association, these are precisely the workers who both are the most important not to leave out and still get left out. Right now in New York, for example, the governor has announced that he'll provide $15 for everybody except restaurant workers. What a honestly stupid move in the moment when these workers are the ones that are going to be spreading foodborne illness. And yes, we live in California, and maybe we think we don't have to worry about New York, but clearly this virus is spreading across the country.
Yeah, New York is supposed to be progressive in many ways. Let me go to our listeners, and by the way, invite you to join us. You can give us a call right now. We welcome your calls, and the number to call is 866-733-6786. That number again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. Let me bring an anonymous caller here from Palo Alto. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to say that, you know, as a homeless person and as somebody who's also an Uber driver, it's kind of frustrating to hear about, like, at the press conference yesterday about the first death, you know, they mentioned there's homeless shelters and stuff like that in the questions stage, and there's really not. I've actually looked a lot, and I've been trying to get housing and it's been many years I've been homeless, so like it's not just homeless camps and stuff like that. So what can we really do? How can we really follow these guidelines?
Well, I'm glad you raised that question. And in fact, I'm looking at a listener named Wolf who writes, I'm an Uber Lyft driver and I live in the same van. So I understand that homeless people have no way to essentially avail themselves of housing. Let me go to you on this, Anthony Wright.
I think that, you know, again, this exposes a lot of the holes in our safety net. And again, it is hard to do some of the social distancing that we're asking people to do if you don't have a stable home situation to sequester yourself in, to practice some of the things that we're asking others to do as well. I think with regard to access to health care, there's also an issue with all of these issues. Including making sure that people have access and enrollment to the Medi-Cal program. With the expansion under the Affordable Care Act, there's a lot more people who have access to that, so people have at least an access to a source of care. But that needs to be connected with other with housing and other social supports, and that's what some of the reforms in Sacramento are attempting to do now. But you know, we're just starting those processes toward whole person care, and we have a lot more to do in that regard.
We've also suffered, I think, because the Trump administration has dismantled the disease security programs. They've cut funding for global health initiatives. I mean, that's all part of the picture here. Let me bring another caller aboard, though. That's Mecca joining us from Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a comment. I find it fascinating that the American people bailed out the auto industry, the bank industry, and just when the people need help.
I don't know what happened to that caller, but we seem to have lost her. We could use a bailout right now, though. Let me bring Dominica Zone into this. She manages the Lifelong East Oakland Health Center. And Dominica, good to have you aboard. Welcome to the program.
Morning.
Good morning to you. Can you give us a picture of what you're dealing with now in the wake of this virus?
Yeah, so of course, you know, the patients that we serve are the patients who are impoverished communities, and even in the best of times, taking care of them can be a challenge. And of course, with this virus, it can mean the difference between, you know, just being sick with the flu and death. And so we are definitely concerned about our patients. Right now, the way that we are funded is by patients actually coming into the clinic to be seen by a provider. So, of course, we don't want sick people coming into the clinic because it infects other patients. And so right now I know that we are working with Medi-Cal to try to get funding for telemedicine or phone visits for our patients to try to contain the virus in our communities.
What's the overall effect on the community as you see it at this point?
Yeah, so definitely for our patients who are homeless, this is definitely can be devastating for them because while people are buying up all the Pareo sanitizers and they have access to wash their hands and things like that, our homeless populations do not. And then also when we talk about social distancing and containment, our patients don't normally have a West Wing that they can go into while other people are there taking care of them. So, of course, this can be an issue as well.
And an issue came up in the last hour about the undocumented, and I'm looking at a response here from a listener named Dina, and I'd like to get your reaction to what she has to say here. She says, in answer to the question about undocumented people who need health care, please remind your listeners that community health centers are open to all regardless of ability to pay and will not question immigration status. Staff at community clinics speak many languages. We're here for everybody. And she gives essentially their San Francisco website and the statewide website. Are you open to the undocumented and those who can't afford?
Yes, we are. Yes, we have. And we have been since the organization started because we are in the community and we are here for the community and we want to knock down any barriers to care for our patients.
So talk about your resources at this point, though. I mean, what you have available and what you don't.
Right. So even just as recently as yesterday when we're trying to go on to some of our sites for ordering supplies, there are shortages and things because everyone is trying to get PPE. So trying to get those items as well are a challenge. But then also the space that we have at our clinic, like if we need to isolate someone, we only have one place right now designated for isolation. So, of course, that can be a problem if we have multiple people coming in that we need to isolate at one time.
talking not only about the phenomenon of the coronavirus, but specifically its impact on low-income people, people who have no health insurance or lack of health insurance or no stable housing or regular work. How are they weathering this? And we certainly want to hear from you, our listeners. Let me remind you, you can give us a call at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Certainly, many of you have some stories, and we'd like to hear them. That number again, 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Here's Jesse, who writes, I'm a freelance bartender who works for several different companies as needed and often on call. This will devastate me economically if there's nothing to supplement my income for the next few months, if that is indeed how long this lasts. Not enough booze on the shelves to calm my anxiety at the moment. And Catherine writes, I'm a graduate student at San Jose State University. I work as an on-call art installer. The clients that usually hire my company are canceling art installs to reduce their exposure to strangers, so my primary source of income has diminished. Additionally, I work as a teaching associate in the art department at San Jose State, and we've been asked to move teaching online. I teach 6 instructional hours per week, and it would take me much more than that to teach online, pre-recording lectures and responding to individual emails instead of in-class questions. I feel in a bind because I want to provide the best education possible to my students, but as an underpaid teaching assistant at a rate of $600 a month, these expectations are unreasonable in terms of pay. Let me read a few more comments that are coming in. We do want to hear these stories. Joan writes, in light of the new law, AB 5, for employee rights, no doubt there will be people not going to the doctor because they have no insurance. But in fact, this situation exists because their employer deliberately misclassifies them as contractors when they should be benefited employees under with medical insurance. Anthony Wright, talk about it. That's a phenomenon that really needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. I think we've been starting to hear about people who, because their hours are being brought down, may not just be losing income, but also losing coverage. And, you know, that's not good in a public health situation like this. I think that there's lots of job categories and even industries that tend to have a predominance of workforces that are not offered health coverage, like the food service and others that we were talking about earlier today. Child care can be included in that. And those are exactly the folks that may need that coverage in a time like this. We're glad that we have some safety nets, including Medi-Cal in California. We have a Medi-Cal program that covers people who are under the 138% of the poverty level, which is about $18,000 for an individual, $36,000 for a family of four. And that's an important safety net for both low-income workers as well as people who are between jobs. And that's a really important safety net when people do find that they're in that situation. But, you know, that's a very low income threshold. And it also has one major exclusion federally, which is the undocumented. We need to make sure that our system is inclusive of everybody, because that helps all of us if everybody's getting preventative and primary care.
And again, Anthony Wright is executive director of the Health Access California. We are going to go to more of your comments, more of your stories, more of your calls. So please feel free to join us. Again, the toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. Talking with Anthony Wright and Saru J. Raman, and also with Dominika Zone. Stay tuned for more. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about how low-income people are expected to deal with the ongoing crisis with the coronavirus, especially when it means, in many cases, simply not being able to go to work, when going to work means actually paying the bills. And there are problems that are being discussed in a broad range of specifics here, and getting a lot of comments from listeners, a lot of narratives from listeners. Let me just read one from Rhea, who says, my husband and I have 2 underschool-age children that have been sick with flu and other viruses this season, which means, of course, we've been sick too. We are each allotted 3 sick days a year, and they are already gone. We're also paying $800 a month for medical insurance, as we do not qualify for discounts through Covered California. No more paid time off to care for the children or ourselves. How does this country expect people to survive and reduce risk of spreading the disease when they make it impossible to stay home? is a question certainly to grapple with. And Dominique Azzone, let me go back to you for a moment here. Dominique Azzone, again, manages Lifelong East Oakland Health Center. How do you know when someone comes into the health center? Well, how do you keep everybody safe from coronavirus? Somebody's going to come into the health center with coronavirus, going to expose you and every other health worker and everybody who might be there.
So what we've been doing is trying to reach out to our patients who have upcoming appointments and asking them the questions about, you know, travel history and also symptoms as a way to be proactive about treating our patients. So if patients are coming in that we find out are meeting the criteria, we're asking them to wait in their cars, and our providers will actually go down to the car to treat the patient rather than having them sent in our crowded waiting room.
Thank you for that, and thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate very much your being with us.
Thank you so much.
And good luck to you. Dominique Azzone, again, is manager of Lifelong East Oakland Health Center. Saru, Jay Rahman, you want to join in here, conversation?
Yeah, I really wanted to pick back up on the conversation about AB5 and independent contractors. You know, sometimes in moments like this and with conversations like this, it can feel a bit hopeless and people can feel helpless. I mean, I think what we're coming up against is, as I said, deep structural inequalities that have existed prior to coronavirus. These are deep problems that our country has had to deal with. As the caller said, we've seen bailouts for these large corporations and not for the masses of people who are struggling to make ends meet. And not for, as an example, these large numbers of workers that are now working for Uber and Lyft and Instacart and DoorDash and not treated as the employees that they truly are. And so I do want to just give one thought for hope, which is that we did get word this morning that the nation's largest full-service restaurant company, which is Darden, which owns Olive Garden, which previously owned Olive Garden, Red Lobster, also is Capital Grille Steakhouse, Eddie V's, Seasons 52, I mean, massive company. They had been one of the strongest and most vitriolic funded opponents to paid sick leave in the country. We would run up against them in Washington, D.C. and in state capitals all over the country. And this morning, thanks to public pressure, they announced that they're providing paid sick leave to all of their employees nationwide.
Oh, that's good news.
That is enormous. It's not enough because they still pay $2.13 to most of their workers nationally.
Yes.
But it shows that when there is consumer outrage, when there's outrage from people to demand change, it can happen. And so demanding that Uber and Lyft and Instacart and DoorDash and all these app-based companies immediately provide workers with sufficient paid sick leave so that these workers can stay home. I mean, these are workers we are going to rely on in a situation where a lot of us are quarantined. We're still going to be using Uber and Lyft. We're going to be ordering food in a lot as if we're quarantined. I mean, we need these services, and they are going to be some of the biggest transmitters of disease. We need them to be able to stay home when they're sick. And so similar to Darden, we can put pressure on legislators to raise wages in this moment, but we can also put pressure. I mean, companies can obviously change their policies overnight. And so that's a very quick way to get change, is to demand Uber, Lyft, give your workers a full wage and paid sick leave and time off. And I would say the same for restaurant companies all over the state of California and nationally. And I would say the same for childcare facilities. We've got to demand that these things happen now, and clearly they can.
Now, I'm glad you're bringing up public pressure, because I think it can be a real catalyst to change. And that Darden story is certainly hopeful. Let me ask you about something else that indeed may be put in the hopeful category. Anthea, a listener, writes, haven't heard this mentioned yet today, but Gavin Newsom posted on Facebook that California residents can apply for state disability insurance if they need to stay home and quarantine. And people that have to care for those that are sick or quarantined can apply for paid family leave. Both indeed the case, Saru.
That is great. It is wonderful. I think we still have to hold these corporations accountable, though, because again, that's we need that. We need the state to step in, but we also need employers who are profiting off of these workers, the value of their labor, and will continue to do so, by the way, through this process. They will continue to profit off of people ordering food. They will continue to profit off of people using Uber and Lyft. And so if the state is stepping up, we need to see corporations do the same. We need to demand that corporations do the same.
Let me bring another caller aboard. That's James Good morning. James, are you there? James from Oakland going once. Okay, let me try another caller then, and that's Herbert from Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing? I'm calling because today this discussion is very important due to the fact that we have an election today. I think people in Michigan, people in Chicago, Missouri, they will have to make a real decision between what Bernie Sanders has been talking about. And maybe people think, yeah, this is socialism, but what we are seeing, like being a capitalist, if you don't have any money, you don't have any capital. What does that mean to you to be a capitalist? Because I can't even afford to stay home today because I do construction and I'm in Oakland. I'm kind of scared, but I can't stay home. So basically, I hope like people in Michigan, people in Chicago, they make the right decision. Choose Bernie Sanders over Joe Biden, who will keep offering us the same old thing. Well, we can't do that for our people.
Herbert, you're making a political speech here, but you're certainly right about people not having the revenue or the resources to stay home. In fact, Anthony Wright, 40% of Americans have less than $400 in reserve. I don't know how that figures in California, but it's probably in a similar category in terms of numbers.
Absolutely. And so when people have these unexpected losses of income or unexpected costs, which is usually what happens when people have healthcare issues, that's enough to change people's financial finances and where a medical emergency becomes a financial one. I mentioned that a lot of people are not just uninsured but underinsured who have high deductible plans. And so maybe they actually haven't hit their deductible, and so they're paying out of pocket until they hit that deductible later in the year. So we need to have some resilience for this. I think we've and we also need to have policies in place to help people in these situations. There is legislation pending in Sacramento to try to fill in some of the gaps, whether it is the exclusion of the undocumented in Medi-Cal. You know, thankfully, we've expanded Medi-Cal to include children and young adults. The governor has proposed including seniors this year. And then on Covered California side, this year is the first year that we have enhanced state subsidies on top of the federal subsidies so people can afford coverage up not just up to four times poverty level, but six times poverty level, $75,000 for an individual, $150,000 for a family of four. We need to do more in that regard, and there's pending efforts on that. So there, the caller is right that there is actually action we can take both at the state level, even without federal approval, and obviously the federal debate this fall is going to be key. You know, unfortunately, some of the debate of at that level is about actually undoing some of the expansions of Medi-Cal and Medicaid, making cuts to those programs, block granting them, and putting barriers in the way of services, whether it's public charge for immigrants or whether it's work requirements for others.
I want to read some listener comments. There's testimony coming in from many of our listeners. Kathy writes, "My husband and I are self-employed with three income streams that we thought provided us decent diversification protection. We are concert producers, musicians, and we operate three vacation rental spaces. Turns out coronavirus is likely to have impact on all of our income streams, and we don't have access to any of the unemployment safety nets. To avoid wiping out our modest investments or losing our home, we are thinking of renting our home and seeking an alternate living situation." Another listener writes, "I'm a full-time graduate student, and my work is in the food industry, and I'm also an on-call nanny and pet sitter. All of my sources of income will be slashed by this crisis. I feel fortunate to have health insurance, and I think, worst-case scenario, I could take out another student loan, but I'm very anxious and frantically trying to apply to positions that would offer me more security." Rad writes, "Let's be frank. The recent coronavirus outbreak is going to perfectly highlight the decades-long erosion of the United States healthcare systems, working-class wages, and public education. Our for-profit healthcare system is a global disgrace, and a huge amount of the U.S. population, most definitely including many in the Bay Area community, are living paycheck to paycheck and have been one single negative event away from complete financial disaster. That event is now here. Hopefully this will wake people up nationwide to the choices we need to make going forward. Sarood Jayaraman, what would you advocate, you and other advocates, perhaps you can speak for others, to urge Congress to do to protect workers who are really struggling during this public health crisis?
Yeah, I think this is a moment where, as the caller said, as the person who wrote in said, we as a country can demand action, and we're seeing it happen, like I said, with Darden. We're seeing various states rush to move paid sick leave legislation. Clearly, we can use this moment to highlight things that we, many of us, have known have been problematic for a very long time.
But forgive me, let's talk about public pressure with Congress now. I mean, specifically, what would you want to
say? Yeah, we can demand that Congress passed the Raise the Wage Act, which passed in the House and now needs to move in the Senate, which calls for a $15 minimum wage for everybody across the country, including tipped workers, including people with disabilities who currently get sub-minimum wages. Let's get that moving in the Senate. Let's get Mitch McConnell to pass that. We can demand that we get paid sick leave at the federal level and paid family leave at the federal level. These are things that are essential to allow people to stay home when they're sick or to stay home to take care of a sick person, both of which are going to be critical in this moment. So we need those things passed in the House and the Senate. We can put a lot of pressure on the Senate to pass what the House has already done, and we can demand that both houses move on more paid leave immediately.
Let me bring you back into the discussion here, Anthony Wright, and get your response to a listener comment. This is Brittany, who writes, my daughter works at a local bakery. They take great care of their employees, providing health insurance and a matching 401k for anyone who works 30-plus hours. But this week, Google canceled all their orders due to work-from-home policies, and the bakery had to immediately furlough roughly half the staff for a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks. Even employers who work hard to do right by their employees are being deeply impacted. I don't know if those employees will be able to find other work. We need a social safety net for this class of workers. Anthony Wright.
Absolutely. I think that it's exactly this class of workers that have some of the least protections, whether it is the paid sick days or paid leave that we were just talking about or health coverage. And certainly if hours are reduced, then there's the likelihood that coverage will be reduced or lost. Again, I think as was stated earlier, there is now state directives for that people can apply for unemployment insurance, disability insurance, those avenues. If people are in between jobs or have a loss of income, they now qualify for Medi-Cal and can get coverage through that mechanism as a safety net. Medi-Cal is now no longer under the Affordable Care Act, just a program for people who are low income long term. It's also a safety net for the rest of us as well. And that's something that people should take advantage of. And there are options as well for folks that are above those income thresholds, including Covered California, with subsidies available so you don't have to pay more than the percent of income. So, and it's important to recognize that Covered California now is in an open enrollment, a special enrollment period. Their open enrollment period is usually from November through January, but because of the new individual requirement to have coverage in the state, people during tax time through April will be able to sign up for coverage. So that's an opportunity that people have uniquely this year, and probably not a moment too soon. Those are some options. Again, that doesn't obviate the need for broader systemic reform to get to a universal healthcare system, but those are some of the options that are available now.
And here's a comment from Kim, who writes, even with health insurance, even with health insurance, the public is fooling themselves if they believe they are covered. The number of denials for care continues to increase while insurance companies do everything they can to fatten their profits from one financial quarter to another. Patients and healthcare providers are paying for the administrative burden of this failed healthcare system. We need single payer now. And Laura writes, while test kits are becoming more available, many doctors, hospitals, practices, insurers require expensive standard flu type testing first before authorizing corona testing. Those preliminary tests are a burden to those who should be tested but can't afford to. This disincentive should be addressed. We need the drive-through access that Singapore has, free testing with two-hour results. I don't know if that's viable, but it's, I think, a worthy point to consider, isn't it, Anthony Wright?
Yeah, I mean, right now, we have been talking about some of the systemic issues about the coverage system, but frankly, some of the issues about just getting tests out have been just an issue of the public health structure. And again, as was pointed out earlier, there is, you know, there were cuts to our pandemic response infrastructure at the federal level. There have been not the investments that we needed to make and proposed cuts at the CDC. And the fact that we don't have the widespread testing is a problem. And that's a problem that is regardless of whether people have coverage or not. Once those tests become more widespread in throughout the country, then these issues of coverage will be impacted. Another thing that Congress can do is that has legislation pending right now is on surprise medical bills. If you do and you get your screening or you get your treatment in a provider that happens to be out of network, you could be on the hook for significant bills and costs. We need to resolve that issue so that people are not in a situation where if they're getting medically necessary care, if they've done the right thing, that they should not get unexpected bills. That was a huge problem before this case. It's now even more urgent, and there's pending legislation at both the state and the federal level on that.
And we're talking about the impact of the coronavirus on low-income people. Are you a worker with an unstable income? Do you lack paid sick leave or health insurance? Give us a call at our toll-free number and join the program. It's 866-733-6786. I'm sorry, Saru, you were going to add something?
Yeah, sorry. I think it's so important to have the access to testing, but I think it's important to understand for a lot of low-wage workers the fact that there is no culture of preventative care, the fact that it's actually discouraged, even in states that have paid sick leave, the culture of at least the restaurant industry, and I know many other low-wage industries, is that you tough it out. If there's a bit of a, you know, a kind of a you get higher status or you're considered a better worker for toughing it out and only really going to seek medical care if you're in an emergency. That is a result of multiple things. It's the culture of work in our country, and especially low wage work. It's also the fact that people have not experienced what it's like to have full care as opposed to only going to see a doctor or to go to an emergency room in the case of an emergency. And that, by the way, has resulted in every year taxpayers paying about $16.5 billion in taxpayer-funded public assistance. A huge percentage of that is people visiting the emergency room for medical care because they don't have any form of preventative care. So there's no culture of people going to seek preventative care, going to see whether they're sick. That just doesn't exist in our industry. The only thing people do is in times of a dire emergency, that's when they go to an emergency room, often without coverage. And so I think that if we want people to access the tests, A, we need to actually give them the time off to go get tested, and B, we have to actually spend a lot of time promoting the idea that it's not actually the right thing to do. It doesn't make you a better worker to tough it out. Actually, we need everybody to seek preventative care now and to get tested, and that needs to come from employers. And I don't think it is.
Saru Jayaraman, again, is director of the Food Labor Research Center, UC Berkeley, and president of One Fair Wage. And Dolores joins us next. Dolores, welcome.
Yes. What I don't understand is no one has spoken about why the richest country in the world can't help its people or healthcare and resolve healthcare problems. But we can dominate the whole world with our huge military budget, spending oodles and oodles of money. I have almost half of our taxes go to weapons producers, and some of our representatives in wonderful Congress are paid off by those weapons producers who are making a tremendous profit. Maybe we'll have another war, and we'll be able to, you know, spend money on that. I mean, so that issue has not been discussed at all on this program, I don't think. That's where we should get money from the federal government. We're paying our taxes, but yet are the people that are suffering now from this terrible coronavirus getting any help?
Actually,
rambling around. I mean, these stories are pathetic.
I'm sorry, Dolores. A previous caller did bring that up, and I'm glad you raised it again. But It really almost warrants a whole in-depth discussion in terms of where money ought to go. But I appreciate your comment, and I thank you for it. And I'm looking at a comment from Hillary who says, with such a huge negative economic impact from people staying home, not working, and not outspending the money to keep our economy going, why aren't we just putting most financial investment into ramping up healthcare resources? There are too many ramifications in the economy to prepare for or fix, and the time is now. If we focus on preparing to treat a large number of sick people, which is at least something we could control, are we not addressing the problem that is creating the panic around everything else? And here's a question from a listener. Let me go to you on this, if I may, Saroo Jayaramanan. This is Matt who writes, this is Robert who writes, the economic impact feels a lot, well, looking at a couple of, too many comments here. I want to get to one of them. And this is the one from Mike, who says, I'm in the trade show and convention business. Our industry has taken major blows by canceled events. While unemployment beats nothing, it won't suffice long term. What if we wake up on July 1st with this issue unresolved and no changes in sight? I want to sort of explore that with you, Saroo. I mean, the final question that he raises there, if this goes on, I mean, a lot of people are thinking the seasonal change, things will change, maybe there'll be a vaccine down the line and so forth. But we're talking about the possibility of not necessarily the short run here, but the long run as well. We have to, don't we, for preparedness sake?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where the question of both, again, corporations stepping up and doing their fair share and providing a public safety net comes in. I think it's wonderful that the governor's talking about disability, access to disability. Probably we need more of that, but at both at the state and the federal level, people being able to access long-term disability if we have to, if they're sick for long periods of time or they have to stay out for long periods of time. This is why we need what most other countries have in the form of paid family leave and the ability to stay home and take care of loved ones that are going to be increasingly sick. So there are social safety nets that we can put into place that other countries have that we do not have. We're the only industrialized nation on earth that doesn't provide these types of social safety nets. And so that is something the federal government can do, the state government can do. But again, corporations can pay their fair share. They can provide people with long-term leave. They can support, actually even fund some of these public safety nets. I think we need everybody to step up in a moment where it's true. The future is uncertain, and we can't be thinking short-term, and we can't be thinking Band-Aids. We actually need to be thinking about the potential reality of people being out for a very long time, and especially our most vulnerable populations being out for a long time. How do they survive? And how do we survive if they are sick and still working when sick?
And when we're talking about vulnerable populations, we're not only talking about those who suffer from poverty, but we're also talking about people who have autoimmune problems, people who are particularly vulnerable because of their age, health complications, those kinds of things. And also, well, let me get another caller on. And that's Nikki. Thank you for waiting. You're on. Morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that Trader Joe's, as a corporation, has just instituted a policy. I know this because I work there, where if you need to take time off because you're sick, they're like, don't come in and we'll pay you your wage. So it's not like you're going to lose money. It's not like you're going to get penalized. But they, you know, we work in such a communal atmosphere, and there's so many different people from different walks of life coming in all the time and sneezing on us and everything. So that worried me, and I really appreciate that they, as a corporation, have stepped up and said, if you are sick or if you are compromised in any way, like autoimmune or something, stay home, and you won't lose a paycheck. And that means everything to me because I live paycheck to paycheck, and missing a day, I can tell.
Well, good luck to you, Nikki, and thank you for the call. I'm looking at some comments here that I want to read from listeners. Robert writes, the economic impact feels a lot like 9/11 when travel and events pretty much shut down. I make my living as a public speaker, and 9/11 saw my work drop from 2 gigs per month to 2 gigs per year, and it didn't pick up for 2 years. This will be similar. Josh writes, I run Oakland Pedal Tours in Oakland, taking people on bar crawls with our 14-passenger bicycles as people choose to avoid going out for events. The birthday parties and corporate team-building events that are 90% of my business will certainly disappear. My other worry is that as my customers are hurt financially, they may choose to avoid discretionary spending like this for a time after the virus is under control or vaccine is developed. And Robin tweets, I want to echo that Covered California is open enrollment, especially if your income has changed. However, California's ABC test for contractors has resulted in these people not being able to benefit from tax deductibility of premiums, but hasn't necessarily resulted in new employer insurance. Can you address that for us, Anthony Wright?
Covered California is open, and there are new subsidies available. To the extent that people are eligible for employer-based coverage, that's always the first and probably the better result. And as has been stated, corporate responsibility is really important here for companies to be offering health coverage to their employers and to remove some of the red tape, whether it's, you know, how many months waiting period for people to get onto coverage or how many hours that they need to qualify. And it's specific to each individual employer and each specific situation, but we need to have both the pressure on employers to do the right thing here, both in terms of who they offer their benefits to and how much, as well as but we also need the public social safety net to make sure that that everybody is included in our public health response or it's not going to work.
I think we have to leave it there, but I want to thank both of you for helping us increase public awareness here and certainly making us aware just of the kind of problems. And thanks to the listeners, too, for chiming in with tweets and emails and also calls, letting us know how you're hit by this coronavirus in your pocketbook and how difficult it is in the struggle. As we used to say in the 60s, courage. Thanks to Anthony Wright from Health Access California. Good to have you with us, Anthony. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to again to you, Saru Jayaramanan, the director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley and president of One Fair Wage. Appreciate your being with us. Thank you. And thanks to Dominica Zone, who also joined us from the Lifelong East Oakland Health Center. And thanks again to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you, and we appreciate your listenership. Stay tuned for more on this radio station. It's KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, and I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.